The First Testament reading is from Psalm 2. You can follow along in page 489 of your Pew Bible. Listen for the word of the Lord. Why do the nations conspire and the peoples plot in vain? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and his anointed, saying, "Let us burst their bonds asunder and cast their cords from us." He who sits in the heavens laughs. The Lord has taken them, has them in derision. Then he will speak to them in his wrath and terrify them in his fury, saying, "I have set my king on Zion, my holy hill. I will tell of the decree of the Lord. He said to me, 'You are my son. Today I have begotten you. Ask of me, and I will make the nations your heritage, and the ends of the earth your possession. You shall break them with a rod of iron and dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. Now therefore, O kings, be wise. Be warned, O rulers of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear and trembling kiss his feet, or he will be angry and you will perish in the way. For his wrath and quickly kindled. Happy are all who take refuge in him." The word of the Lord.
The Second Testament reading today comes from Matthew, chapter 16, verses 13 through 20. You can follow along on page 18 in your pew Bibles. Let's listen for the word of the Lord. Now when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea in Philippi, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that the Son of Man is?" And they said, "Some say John the Baptist, but others Elijah, and still others Jeremiah or one of the prophets." He said to them, "But who do you say that I am?" Simon Peter answered, "You are the Messiah, the Son of the living God." And Jesus answered him, "Blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not prevail against it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven, and whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven, and whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven." Then he sternly ordered the disciples not to tell anyone that he was the Messiah. This is the word of the Lord. Good morning. Those of you who may not know me, I am the director of youth ministries here. My name is Bethany. And if you knew that about me, you might not know that I'm also in seminary at Ecumenical Theological Seminary down in Detroit. I'm starting my third year there, so there's a light at the end of the tunnel. I can see it coming. There's an end point. I'm also very excited that it is summertime because I like to go disc golfing in the summer. I'm an ENFP on the Myers-Briggs scale, if you know what that is. If you don't, you can Google it. And I tell you these things about myself as a really brief introduction, but the question of who I am is what we want to talk about today. Not who I am, but who you are and who we are as a people. We wrestle with this question our whole lives. It is a fundamental thing that we get asked over and over by ourselves and by the people around us. Psychologists have tried to nail down who people are by developing personality tests, like the Myers-Briggs test or an Inkblot test. They'll say one person is extroverted while another person is introverted. One person may be more of a thinker while another person is more of a feeler. When I became an inquirer for ministry, I had to sit for a six-hour psychological exam. It was an interview with a person and multiple questions, multiple choice questions and sentences and paragraphs that I had to write. And after a few weeks, I got a report about 10 to 15 pages long of who I am. Now, I admit they got some things right. They got some things kind of scary, right? But I really thought, who is that really who I am, these 10, 15 pages? And I think it's more. As a culture, we are obsessed with this question. On the internet, if you're on Facebook or have any sort of social media connection, you'll see people asking and answering quizzes to try and get to this point of who a person is. My friends this week took quizzes that had the titles of which Disney princess are they? Which Avenger superhero are they? I saw one that was which 1950s song are you? Or which cute little puppy picture are you? These quizzes all come with great answers that no matter who you actually are, they come off as compliments and a raving review. While I was procrastinating writing the sermon, I took a test called which Starbucks Frappuccino are you? It said that I am a cinnamon roll Frappuccino. I am very sweet and absolutely adored by everyone. You're the boss when it comes to hugs and compliments. You're outgoing and make friends easily wherever you go. Who wouldn't want that to be the answer to who they are? It's a glowing endorsement, and all I had to do was answer 5 ridiculous questions. But if I'm completely honest with myself, that test and answer have very little to do with who I actually am, except that I procrastinate. Another way we try and figure out who we are or who somebody else is by asking them what they do. Graduates, I apologize in advance for the 8,000 times you're going to get asked this summer, what are you doing after high school? This is an attempt to get at a who are you answer. Who has high school made you? Who are you becoming in the future? But who we are is much more than our jobs. Our hobbies can sometimes give clues. People might ask, what do you do with your free time? Graduates, this can be a hard time as well to figure out who you are because for so many years, you've defined yourself as wrestlers or actors or singers or basketball players. And while you still might do those things in the future, they might become less and less of who you are as an adult. A true who am I question comes at 3 a.m. in the morning, when there is a situation impending with the sunrise that you have to have a response to, when you have 5 hours left, 3 hours left, an hour left to decide who you are. The answer to who am I gets answered in a split-second decision in the middle of a crisis or when nobody else is looking. Are you the type of person who will pick up that piece of trash on the sidewalk even though you're late? Are you the type of person who will help someone with a flat tire? Are you the type of person who will read everything the professor assigns or just skim through it and find the spark notes later? To make things even worse, the answer to who we are is a moving target. If I asked 5-year-old you, I would get a different answer than if I asked teenager you. I would get a different answer if I asked you today. And I may even get a different answer to who are you next week. With how much we change in our lifetime, it can be hard to really know who we are at any given time and any given moment. A crisis of self-identity can come at any time. And when we have to rebuild our answers to who we are, we often seek another's opinion. We find family and friends who know us well, who can remind us of who we are. A faith community can offer us the advice of like-minded people. There may even be people around us here who have suffered the same identity crises that we're going through ourselves. We seek these people out rather than strangers because we know them. Even though we don't know who we are in that moment, we still know them. We've seen them face struggles. We know that their advice is sound and good, and we know how they will respond to us even in the darkest hours. Knowing them helps us know ourselves. But what about God? How often do we check in with God to find out who we are? We often forget this option or use it as a last-ditch effort to try and regain self-identity. It's much easier to call somebody else on the phone and ask them for advice than it is to slow down and find quiet time with God. Maybe part of our apprehension is because we don't really know who God is and trust the advice that we'll get. As Christians, we're supposed to use Jesus as our model for who God is. So the question boils down to, who is Jesus? And do I know him enough to ask for his advice? When I went off to college, I thought I knew who Jesus was. I had sat in a pew most Sundays of my life. I went to VBS every summer. Jesus was the ultimate friend. He was the good guy. But when I got to Michigan State, I had to ask myself, who is Jesus really? The moment that question popped in my head, I was in the quad. Most colleges have them. It's an area where all the buildings for those core level, entry-level classes are. There are hundreds of thousands of students in this area on any given day. So I went down for my first class, and in the middle of the sidewalk was a man on a box with a bullhorn. I see some nodding heads and some rolling eyes. You may know where this is going. This was my first encounter with a sidewalk preacher. Now, I lived in a small town, grew up there. The biggest event that we had was a craft show, so we didn't attract many sidewalk preachers. He was saying things that I thought I knew. He was using Jesus and God and some scriptures that I had heard thrown around, but his tone of voice was so hateful. And he used words that condemned things like hell and fire. And I had to ask myself, do I know who Jesus is? How does this guy who has the same scriptures I have be on the sidewalk yelling and screaming with so much hate? Luckily, I had a really great Bible study that I was already going to, and they helped me to realize that I'm not the only person to have a problem with him on the sidewalk. The other students there reminded me that my interpretation of Jesus as the good guy and a friend was still good and a good thing to think about Jesus. But the question was raised now for me. Who is Jesus? In our New Testament reading today, we find Jesus asking this same question. He takes his disciples far away from the crowds to decompress and relax. And while they're relaxing with friends, he decides to ask them who people are saying he is. The disciples respond with, "You're John the Baptist, you're Elijah, Jeremiah, or another prophet." What the people have picked up in the crowds is that Jesus is a great teacher. He possibly is even Elijah, the one who's supposed to tell of the coming Messiah. But no one has really caught on to who Jesus really is. Have you ever been in a crowded room and someone calls out your name, and you turn around to see them, some a friend, and then you realize they're not actually talking about you, and you get that pit in your stomach? I have a feeling Jesus had a little bit of a pit in his stomach. He had been working so hard and had not quite gotten that message across. But hope is not lost. He is sitting with his disciples, the ones that he has spent the most time and effort to teach. They have heard every word that he's said. He's done extra teaching after. They've gone on long trips together, and we all know how much you get to know somebody on a trip. So surely somebody in that room knows Jesus. So he asks them, "But what about you? Who do you say that I am?" Nothing. No disciple is willing to step up and say anything. If they had iPhones, they would all have gotten an alert that they had to check on at that exact moment. But thank goodness for Peter. Peter finally breaks the silence and he says, "Well, you're the Messiah. You're the Son of the living God." Yes, Jesus is finally seen for who he is. For the moment, Peter has done something that no other disciple is willing to do. I say for the moment because this is Peter. Peter is the one who stepped out of the boat, trusting in Jesus, and then while he's standing on the top of a wave, he doubts. But for the moment, Peter's on track. Peter's on par. He's got it. How? How did Peter know who Jesus was? He didn't have any personality tests. He couldn't phone a friend. He just knew. With the help of God. Jesus points out that Peter could not have come to this understanding on his own. For someone to know who Jesus is takes more than flesh and blood. It's a knowing beyond the eyes and the ears and the brain. It takes God's input to really know Jesus. The blessing that comes next shows us how important it really is to know who Jesus is. Because by knowing Jesus, Peter gets to see who he is himself. Jesus says that the church will be built around Peter and his understanding. Peter is now a leader, a foundation, and a rock. Figuring out who Jesus is will shape who Peter will become in the future. Peter shows us that our foundation of self should also be based on our understanding of Jesus and his teachings. So our first step is to ask, who is Jesus, before we decide who we are? That same church that helped me with my sidewalk preacher also was the first church to send me on my Mexico mission trip. And there is when I started to see who Jesus was. Jesus is the one who gives piggyback rides to the children, even though you're sunburnt right where they hold on. Jesus is the one who gets another load of supplies, even though you're sore from head to foot. Jesus is the one who gives a water bottle to somebody else, even though you're thirsty yourself. Who Jesus is became interwoven with who we were and the work that we were doing. Jesus was the inspiration to send us to Mexico instead of Cancun, Mexico, with some of our other friends. And Jesus inspired us every day to work a little bit better and a little bit harder to support each other. Now, this is not to say that my understanding of who Jesus is will not be different to somebody else. That sidewalk preacher and I had very different ideas of who Jesus was. We had the same scriptures, but they shaped who we were, how we interpreted them. And Jesus warns about this conflict at the very end of this New Testament reading. Right after praising Peter for saying that he's the Messiah, he tells the other disciples, "But don't go tell anyone that I'm the Messiah." When Jesus does this, it drives me crazy. Jesus, isn't this the point? Aren't we supposed to be proud of who you are, go out into the world and tell people about you and what you've done? But we saw a little bit of the problem in the Old Testament reading. Hopefully some of you were a little bit concerned with what Psalm 2 was saying about the Messiah. The idea of Messiah back then was that someone would come to be a vindicator and a fighter, someone to vanquish all of Israel's foes and rise Israel up above everyone else with whips and chains and other things that were in Psalm 2. But this wasn't who Jesus was. And he didn't want that image of Messiah to be interacted with his message and interfere with what he needed to get done. So he warns his disciples to be careful of how we use our words, that people will understand them to mean the same things we do. We all have sent an email that maybe got misinterpreted. We were suddenly in trouble for something that we thought we were just being funny about. Words can mean different things to different people. So when we're trying to show the world who Jesus is, we've worked hard sitting with God to figure out who Jesus is. How do we tell the world? That is when our understanding and our answer to who we are becomes the most meaningful. Because who we are says an enormous amount about who Jesus is. And if we take who Jesus is and allow it to shape who we become, we can tell anyone, regardless of language or distance. This is when John usually gives you a challenge, but since I work with teenagers, I'll give you some homework. Seek God's help in figuring out who Jesus is this week. I read a quote from a monk that said, "Spend 20 minutes a day with God, unless you're busy. If you're busy, spend an hour with him." Take this understanding that God gives you of who Jesus is and let it shape you to become someone and something in the world. Thanks be to God.